comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. That's a guarantee. A place where you actually matter. Are you subscribed to our free weekly newsletter? If you're not, be sure you do. And believe it or not, now, look, if you've sent me one of these emails, don't feel bad. You're not alone. I get emails from time to time from people who say, well, I looked all over your page and I couldn't find the link to sign up for K-Files eZine. It's the largest freaking link on the page, right in the middle when you open the page, right under where it says Listen Live, that whole panel, right under there it says K-Files eZine, big link. So click that and subscribe, and it's free. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. No strings attached. Well, we're sort of getting back into the rhythm of things. Believe me, folks, if you don't believe me, if you think I've been feeding you a line about how much there is to do with this show, send Jerry Wills an email and ask him, is it true? It is overwhelming. He's doing a great job, but I think he would tell you it's absolutely true, and if anything, I don't tell you all of it. So, but there's a lot to do. And whenever I was out, you know, I was out for Monday and Tuesday. I was out of town last week. And then... In addition to that, I had the emergency situation with my mom. And so it just really sort of, all of that knocked everything off the rails. And we're beginning to get back into the normal swing of the routine here. And that means that I was able to do a vlog today. I haven't done one in about almost a week and a half. That's because of all the stuff that had to be done to prepare to be gone, and then I was gone, and then all the stuff I had to catch up on when I got back. Okay? So, but if you haven't seen the vlogs, be sure you check those daily, because it is my custom to make one every day. If you happen to get there and it's yesterday's, don't panic. It just means that we've had something come up that has demanded additional attention. But the vlog is there for you, all right? Also, let me say, if you're not a member at kevinsmithshow.com, you do get to hear the shows for free, and you do get to hear the latest show. We put it up there within a few hours after the live show, and so you can hear, you know, whatever was our latest show. But there's so much more, folks. So much more. For one thing, if you're in the members area, if you're a member, 23 cents a day, less than the cost of this cup of coffee. If you're a member, you get to watch the shows live, and then you get to watch the latest show, and then there's chat and forums and Video Galaxy and a library of ebooks to download, lots of stuff. 23 cents. All right. We'll be back right after this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. You know, we humans are a peculiar bunch. We tend to think that that the majority thinks like us. How many times have you heard someone say, well, everybody I know says this? And out of the almost 8 billion people on the planet, how many of them do you know? But we tend to think that we're in the majority. We tend to think that the rest of the world is pretty much like where our feet are standing, and any place that isn't like this, there's something wrong and weird about it. We tend to think that if there is life out there in the far reaches of space, it's got to be pretty much like us. And we send our science equipment out into space to look for us. In short, we're homo terracentric. Now, psychologists have another phrase for that. They call it narcissistic. We think it's all about us. We also tend to think that what is has always been when we're thinking about the universe. We have difficulty, for instance, in buying the idea that there used to be another planet in this solar system and that it exploded into what is now the asteroid belt. And because we see the moon in our sky night after night, we tend to assume that it's just always been there. And yet, there are accounts of people who lived on Earth in a far distant past, in a time when there was no moon in the sky. Now, my guest this evening is Henry Kroll. He's been with us before. He's been researching this and other ancient mysteries for many years. It's my pleasure to welcome him back to the show. Henry, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Yeah, thank you very much, Kevin, and Happy New Year to all you folks out there. Hope you have a better, prosperous New Year.
Well, thank you, and certainly we hope the same for you. Now, Henry, I also want us to, tonight, if we can, I want us to get into the transdimensional features of monatomic gold, the Philosopher's Stone, because it links, I think, to this. But I want to start with this whole thing about a time before there was a moon. And by the way, the Velikovsky folks, you need to know, Henry found a Velikovsky book that was never published. And he has sent me part of that book with links, I guess, to all of the book. But very, very interesting information in this book by Velikovsky. Tell us about what you know about this. What's the deal? How do we know there was a time when there was no moon?
Well, I searched for this information, and I didn't know that it was in Velikovsky's book, but I've been trying various combinations of words on Google to find this information about the history of people who lived on the planet before there was a moon. And this is after, of course, I wrote my massive 400-page book, Cosmological Ice Ages, which I outline when the moon came in based on Antarctic ice core data and also online computer that I use, impact data that shifted Earth's rotational pole. Anyway, I've been looking for this material for at least 3 years, and anyway, I heard that from other people that it existed. That's why I was looking for it. But anyway, Velikovsky did extensive research on this, and the title of his unpublished book is the first three words of the Bible, In the Beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
he actually gives us quite a list of people. He gives us quite a list of people, famous people, who have written in what we consider to be ancient times. For instance, Democritus, Aristotle, Apollonius, Plutarch, Ovid, Lucian, Censorinus, very famous people who all wrote about the people who lived before there was a moon.
Apparently there was no moon up there. Even North American tribes have legends of it coming in. Giordano Bruno is a 16th century Italian philosopher, is reported to have written in his De Immensio, book 4, page 56-57, that those who believe that there was a time, as our mythologist says, that when the moon was believed to be younger than the sun and not yet created, and then the Arcadians dwelt not far from Po, are believed to have been in existence before the moon, before it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then Theodorus writes in his first book that the moon had appeared a little while before the war which is fought by Hercules against the giants. Now this Greek, we used to call it mythology, but they named the planets in, after various heroes of old. And a lot of these information, the Greeks got their information from the Ones and from the Anunnaki, that the Ones were aquatic beings, supposedly, that swam up out of the ocean and gave the Greeks their mathematics and higher learning. But anyway, there's a lot of pictures on the internet of these creatures carved in stone in various reliefs. If you do a search on the word Anunnaki on Google, you can see many, many pictures of them, and they picture them kind of looking like fish or wearing fish skin suits. The Anunnaki themselves were quite tall, and they looked more bird-like. And they had sort of normal-looking hands, but they had a more of a beak face, and they were 8-10 foot tall, I believe. The Bible talks about them, too. I sent you some copies of Bible passages. One is in Numbers 13:23 about Moses sending out his spies to look on these people that were working in the Promised Land there. And they were great men of great stature. And they saw them working some devices there where people were disappearing, and they reported back to Moses that the land eateth up the people. And
yeah.
There we saw the giants in 13:33, the sons of Anak, which came of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. So they were felt very small, and they could walk among them, and they just ignored them. They didn't think that they were any threat, these genetically engineered Hebrews that Moses had been training his army out in the desert for 40 years and killing off the older generation to get rid of the ancient religions. But anyway, they had wanted to take over this promised land, and it was inhabited by giants, dwelt therein in Deuteronomy.
But now what do the giants have?
Call them Zamzems.
Yeah, but what do the giants have to do with the time when there was no moon?
Well, apparently the Anunnaki themselves may have brought in the moon, and it may have been their spaceship. Now, when I wrote the book, I did a lot of science, and I had some really sharp scientists help me, and there's a lot of radiation on the surface of the moon. I mentioned to you last time we talked that there's about 430 rems per hour on the moon. And actually, during solar maximum, that goes up to over 600 rems an hour, about 650. And when the first astronauts landed on the moon, Armstrong and Aldrin, that was solar maximum at that time. And we just don't know how they survived. And we did research on their film that they used in their cameras. And as far as we can tell, they didn't use any kind of special film. And that much radiation would have cause the film to overexpose, and there would be in focus in the middle of the film, and it would be blue around the outside rim at that much radiation using the Hasselblad cameras that they had. They were shielded and developed by the Hasselblad company, the one they wore on their chests. But anyway, getting back to the moon itself, the radiation was so intense out there in space that any time you put up radiation shielding, it backscatters X-rays. So you have to live under a surface of 15, 20 miles of dirt, which we think the moon has, and it's hollow inside, has a hollow interior. And NASA has satellites that they put around the moon, too, with magnetometers and also gravitometers that they can determine pretty much what's underneath the core. And they don't tell us this information, but there appears to be 1,000-mile-long metallic or steel beams, iron beams, holding the thing together. It may be an artificial structure. There's one fault line that's 1,000 miles long. Now, if it was a planet or a real moon with rock and dirt underneath, you wouldn't see a perfectly straight fault line 1,000 miles long. It would be jagged.
Mm-hmm.
So, this information is out there, and I put quite a bit of it in my book, Cosmological Ice Ages, including what the Russians thought of the moon itself. But the information that we just came up with recently regarding the moon and these ancient writers, philosophers, that talked about the race of people that lived on Earth before there was a moon, it's difficult to put a timeline on this, but it appears to be about 11,700 years ago when this was happened, when this came to be. That, see, the reason it was brought in around Earth, the way I see it anyway, is that Earth was had a rotation that was perpendicular to the sun's rays, and we were in an ice age for about 100,000 years or 90,000 years. And there was very little arable land. See, Earth has lost 98% of its atmosphere. It used to be around 750 pounds or maybe 1,000 pounds per square inch before life got started. And then we got close to some other stars, which I talk about in the book, that brought in 100 times more UV light than our sun. And a really thick atmosphere like that would extend more than 2,500 miles above the planet, so you couldn't possibly get life started without getting close to some other stellar objects. So anyway, all that sunlight over the last 650 million years, there were no ice caps on the Earth after it got near these other stars. And for 650 million years, the climate was very warm. It was 50 to 80 degrees average temperature. And about 2-3 million years ago, it suddenly dropped down to 32 degrees average temperature on Earth, and that's where it is today. We're in an ice age. We have ice caps on the globe, and we've lost 98% of our atmosphere. Now, to replenish the atmosphere on this planet, you would have to bring a moon in to increase volcanism. And then you would also have to tilt the Earth in relation to the sun to increase the amount of sun's rays further north and further south, about 1,800 miles further north and south, to double plankton growth to release more free oxygen.
And you're saying that this happened about 11,700 years ago?
Yes. Well, I don't know where the Anunnaki came from. I have no idea, but they could have come from ancient Earth and then gone somewhere and then came back to discover that it was we're in this ice age. But we're in orbit around this another group of stars in this 100-to-1 elliptical orbit, so it would have been easy for them to arrive here when we're in close if they came from that particular star system.
But right.
We go out to 9 light years right now and practically stop, and then we turn around, and right now we're heading back at 7.5 kilometers per second. We're in this 100-to-1 ellipse, and it was due to an explosion that occurred 3 million years ago.
Now, before we go very much further, I want to read one of these. You sent me a number of excerpts from the Bible that talk about a time before there was a moon. And I just picked one out because I picked one that is in the Velikovsky document, because the way he has it translated is way different from the way it's translated in any of the English versions. So I just picked it and said, okay, I'm going to check it. And I checked it in Hebrew, and Velikovsky has it translated correctly. There's no question about it when you read it in Hebrew. And it's in Psalm chapter 72, verse 5. All right, now, folks, I want you to listen carefully to how that is translated in an English version here. Here it is, Psalm 72, verse 5.
Very interesting.
They shall fear thee as long as the sun and moon endure throughout all generations. All right, here's the accurate translation. Thou wast feared since the time of the sun and before the time of the moon, a generation of generations. It's very, very different. Now, for those of you who went through my seminar called Gods in the Garden, you know that I deal with that very thing. You know that I deal with the fact that there has been a very, very long, millennia-long attempt to cover the truth about our past. There's one example right there. Now, my question, Henry, is why are they trying to cover the truth about the past?
It's societal control, societal manipulation. They want us to believe their version of the truth, no matter what it may be. I've written about this type of, you know, brainwashing, if you want to call it that, in some of my other books.
But, well, you know, I have a theory, and we have a break coming up. I have a theory that I want to throw out and get your response to it when we come back. I talked with Jerry Wills about it last night, but I'm going to share it with everybody here when we come back, and I want to get your response, Henry. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. This is the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening is Henry Kroll. Henry, here's the theory I said I was going to throw out. You know, there are archaeological finds, paleontological finds, all over the earth, all the time. They find a new species of dinosaur they didn't know about. The same thing happens actually with astronomy. They find some new system out there they didn't know about. They find a planet out there that they didn't know about, and it's doing things that a planet shouldn't be able to do, like the one that's spinning backwards. And so all the time they're having to rewrite what we know about the ancient past. Now, there are certain places where someone, an archaeologist, or just someone, discovers some very ancient buildings, ancient civilization. And all of a sudden, various government agencies from whatever country descend upon them, swear them to secrecy. They can't tell about it, can't dig, can't do anything. And when I ask the question, why, most of the guests just say, well, it's a mystery. All right, here's what I think. I think it's a possibility. Let me put it that way. I think this is a possibility. If we go put a colony on the moon, and they're talking about doing that, you know. So we go put a colony on the moon, One of the things they say we will have to do for long-term colonization is we have to use the moon's resources to build shelters, buildings, etc. And they say it will probably be glass structures because there's so much silica. And they probably will just use what's there and build structures out of that. Okay, now if you are the Anunnaki, now there we would be, by the way, there we are on the moon in very primitive kind of structures, just using the materials that are on the moon, but we're there with high technology. Okay, Anunnaki come to Earth. They've got very high technology. And let's say they do the same thing. They use the materials that are here to build their buildings. And they say, well, there's rocks everywhere. Let's use rocks. So you have primitive buildings, but very high technology with the Anunnaki. And so some of these places that get quarantined so that archaeologists can't discover what's there, I'm just betting that there's a chance that in those particular ancient structures are remnants of high technology from what we usually refer to as ancient astronauts. If that's the case, and I think it's entirely plausible, if that's the case, I would think that they would also prevent us from knowing anything about these people who existed prior to the moon, if the moon is in fact itself artificial, because that would be ancient high technology. And so they would poo-poo the idea that the moon is artificial, and they would poo-poo the idea that there was a time before the moon was in our sky. What do you think?
Well, I think that the technology we do have, we didn't invent most of it. We got a lot of it from various visitations. After those little drop of people landed in China, most of the inventions in the world appeared over in China.
Yeah, but I'm wondering about the deal with the reason they keep us from knowing about these things. Now, the reason, I think, is because to admit the presence of high technology admits the fact that there are extraterrestrials that are highly intelligent. To admit that the moon has not always been in the sky, if they admit that, they have to say how it got here and where it came from. And if it's artificial, it is very high tech, and they don't want to admit the high tech part.
That's for sure. I get into some really heated arguments with a couple of my neighbors who are addicts to CNN and the mainstream news. And when we do, you know, they say, well, this, they should release this information. If it's true, they should release it to the public. And that's, and then they say, well, I tell them that they won't. And then I have to run off a copy of Margaret Mead's report and the Brookings Institution report and have them read that. You know, there's a reason why they won't report it.
And what's their reaction once you show them that? How do they react?
Well, you know, it doesn't seem to faze them because they're kind of locked in to our brainwashing media. You know, they just can't digest it, that we couldn't release this information to the public. They just don't believe it. So, but you know, NASA and all of them have tied in with this ancient report. I guess it was done in the 30s or 40s by Margaret Mead, and went in her studies on primitive tribes around the world, that whenever a primitive civilization comes in contact with a more advanced one, they lose all of their technology or all of their ancient religions and everything. You know, they just sometimes they can't accept it themselves, and they revert to alcoholism, and their whole society degenerates.
Yeah.
They have no care in the world anymore. They just don't care. And they're afraid that that's what's going to happen to us if we come in contact with some other superior beings. They figure, well, they won't, American public will stop paying taxes and they won't go to work anymore, you know.
Well, I wonder if as they look at the state and status of the American public now, I wonder if they think that we're doing pretty well. I wonder if they think that there's very much to lose. There's not much left to lose. There is no identifiable, at this point, there's no remaining identifiable American culture.
Well, they try to rally a little patriotism out of us to get our people motivated to send our children overseas, but I came across some data, and I've sort of cut and pasted into a book. I don't know what to call it yet. I've got 100 pages of this crazy stuff, but one of the government reports refers to us as Goyim, G-O-Y-M, and they link us as being cattle. We are cattle. In other words, we provide the money and the work, the resources. All we have left is our labor.
Well, and you get taxed for that. Yeah, but see, that comes from being... That comes from being patriotic to a government instead of patriotic to a constitution that created a government. And that's where we are. All right, now, the time before there was a moon, though, what was there civilization? Some of these writers talk about there being civilization.
There were tribes of people living in America, and there are tribes in the Middle East also, you know, that existed there. And I don't think they may have been living in the mountains, the Caucasus Mountains. There may have been Caucasians there. I don't know. I found some information where some people migrated there from the north. There were islands up where the Arctic Ocean is today that were crushed or disappeared after they brought the moon in, and they had migrated out of there.
Is that the Danae and the Deucalion?
No, I just can't remember it right at the present time. My age has caught up with me on this one, but...
All right. The thing that is interesting, though, is that if the moon was not out there, okay, let's just assume that all of this is absolute fact. It's chiseled in stone and cut in steel. Okay, so if the moon was not out there, that means that the Earth axis would be pretty much straight up and down. It wouldn't be tilted.
Perpendicular to the sun's rays.
Yeah. Okay. Now, wouldn't that also, and the fact that the moon's not there, wouldn't it also have had a big effect on the ocean levels at that time and the tides at that time?
The oceans were considerably lower. There was a lot of land exposed in the Mediterranean and also in some of the other seas.
Okay. So...
But after the moon was brought in, sea levels rose approximately 300 feet.
And now, did they do that...
Possibly due to...
Did they do that rapidly, or was it slow? Was it a slow process, or did it happen suddenly?
I think it happened very quickly, because it caused all of these exterminations of animals in North America and piled up bones in Siberia. And they found a lot of the mastodons with green food in their mouths and green food in their stomachs, and it was quick frozen. I mean, it had to go. They were eating green vegetables, and all of a sudden they were quick frozen at 200 below zero temperatures, and possibly the vacuum of space or the atmosphere was swept away as this large object came by. And it may have precipitated the legend of Nibiru, In fact, the moon may be Nibiru. We don't know. We can't pin it down exactly. But we do know that all of these animals were killed off, and the tribes in North America, and then also some of the tribes survived by going underground for a while, a few days. So there's American Indian legends where they come out of the ground. And then they were fighting a war with these Anakim, or the Anunnaki, or these giants that had six fingers. And I have lunch with a Texan. He's from Texas, a big guy, worked in the oil fields. I have lunch with him practically every day. I love the guy. And he mentioned that the reason the Indians in America held up their hand and they say how when they greet you is because they wanted to count the fingers. If you had six fingers, they'd get their bow and arrow out and kill you. They were at war with these giants for hundreds of years after they brought the moon in. And
Okay, now let me ask you this for clarification. Before the moon came here, by whatever means, before it came here, were there giants on Earth? Or did the giants arrive when the moon arrived?
That's a good question. I couldn't tell you that. I do know that they have found skeletons and bones dating back 18,000 years in Americas that are normal-sized people. They don't tell us the date of these giants. They won't give us the date of them, you know, whenever they find them. They found a lot of skulls in South America that are on display. You can find them on the web.
All right, we have to step away for a break, Henry, and we'll be back right after this. It's the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Henry Kroll. And Henry, let me ask you this. We were talking about giants and when they arrived here. We don't seem to have any ancient writings that talk about giants in the time of the Arcadians. Now, the Arcadians, that's what all these ancient writers called the people who lived before the moon. And whoever the Arcadians were, it doesn't seem that there were giants around at the time. That still doesn't mean that the giants arrived with the moon. But it would seem that the moon is kind of a dividing point, and the giants arrived either with it or at some time after it. What do you think?
Well, all we have is what I sent you, actually. The Lucian in his astrology, he says that the Arcadians affirm in their folly that they are older than the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they may be older than the moon. We just don't know. But it's difficult to pin that down. The only way that I could do it using science was using the Antarctic ice core graphs of when the climate suddenly changed. And that's 11,714 years ago, around there. And there was extreme mountain building in South America and also all over the world, actually. I believe the mountains across here where I live in Cook Inlet, Alaska, came up at that date. Eliana Volcano and also Redoubt Volcano. And they're about 10,300 feet high in mountains, and there was extreme volcanism, which would have cooled off the earth for a few hundred years. Before it would warm up again, and before people could survive all this mountain building.
All right, now, when you look things like, say, the Great Pyramid, there's a lot of controversy about, you know, the modern-day Egyptologists basically put it about 4,000 to 4,500 years ago. But there's a geologist, Dr. Robert Schock, who took a look at it, and he said that looking at the geological markings on it, it's been subjected to a tremendous amount of water, rain, erosion, and that the last time, well, that was the Sphinx, actually, and that the last time that we had water like that in that area was somewhere between 10,500 years ago to 12,000 years ago. So that brackets the time that you're talking about. Do you think that the Great Pyramid was around before the moon arrived?
No, I don't believe so. In fact, I think it was engineered by Thoth, who was probably an Anunnaki or a descendant of it. He was the architect of the Great Pyramid, Thoth. But he was also, you know, the chief scribe, and he gave mankind about everything we have. If you look up his name, and, you know, it's...
Well, I believe, doesn't Velikovsky identify Thoth as the same person that the Bible refers to as Enoch?
Enoch? No, I don't. Yeah, he may have, but I don't think he was Enoch. I think Enoch was a mortal man, and Thoth lived a very long time. He had become an immortal. And they had the technology, these people that lived off-planet, to extend their lives thousands of years. These Anunnaki, and I could get into that and bring the people up to speed on this white powder of gold and how they can.
Okay, but I want us to do that. But
came here.
Before we do that, let me ask one more question. It seems that you sort of lean towards the moon kind of belongs to the Anunnaki. Am I correct about that?
It's appearing more and more. The more research I do on it, it certainly looks like it. You know, I didn't want to believe any of this when I started writing the book, but it's just looking very strange, you know, especially after I got this material from Velikovsky and then other writings on the subject.
All right. Well, let's assume that your research takes you that direction, and that it belonged to the Anunnaki. What do you think? Are they still there?
I believe they probably are living on the moon, you know, and they probably live among us now, or at least they contributed some to our genetic manipulation to make who we are today. And they, if you look at what shape the Earth was in before the moon was brought in, then it's obvious that it was brought in to increase the amount of arable land and double the productivity of the oceans and replace the atmosphere. We lost 98% of the atmosphere on the planet. We're down to 14 pounds per square inch at sea level, roughly, and originally it was 750 pounds per square inch, and time of the dinosaurs it was around 30 to 100 pounds per square inch. So basically planet was dying, and we needed a few extra thousand years to become conscious. Humanity does, so we can go out and do something. Otherwise, it's our whole existence on the planet's a big waste of time, right? The way I see it, if we don't become conscious and quit killing each other over carbon and get out and do something.
All right. So you see,
the book in the first place is to motivate people to alter societal consciousness into a more benign direction where we're heading.
All right, so you see the Anunnaki coming here and doing all this stuff sort of as a kind of a rescue mission for the Earth.
Well, it was at the time, but there were very few people living on the Earth, and it was very non-productive. It would not sustain a larger population before they brought the moon in, because there are huge ice caps on both poles, and we wouldn't warm up until another 15,000, years, roughly, by the time we get back to our host star, there was an orbit around. So, you know, it just gives us a few extra thousand years to get our act together, and we better take advantage of it and start using our brains instead of, you know, giving our souls and our body and our minds away to mythical things.
All right, now you mentioned the monatomic gold. How does that sort of fit into this whole discussion about where the moon came from and when it got here and who brought it here and so forth? How does the monatomic gold fit into that?
Well, that is why one of the reasons that they came here in the first place. Earth is fairly rich in gold. There, if you read Zachariah Sitchin and some of the other researches, that they came here to mine gold. And they originally were trying to take it out of seawater. There's a lot of gold in the ocean water along with every trace mineral on the planet, and it just wasn't suitable their technology to get it out of seawater. But the later on, you know, they could go out in these deserts, or like in Phoenix, Arizona, which used to be an ocean at one time, and all the seawater evaporated and left all of the gold and the platinum, and all of the elements are in the soil. They're laying out there in front of you, including a lot of monatomics. There's a tremendous amount of it there. Now, I think people down there in Phoenix, Arizona are smarter than other places in the United States or in the world, because they eat food that's grown on that soil. Now, these atoms are used by our brains for not only for cell division to increase your lifespan, but also to for brain synapse, if you get the correct more volume inside the brain.
All right.
I don't know if you want me to.
Yeah, I want to talk about monatomic gold, the Philosopher's Stone, and because you mentioned some stuff to me about that is pretty phenomenal. But let me tell you, we have a break coming up here in about 30 seconds. Well, I was wrong. We have a break taking over right now. I looked at the wrong clock. So when we come back from this break, I want us to talk about the Philosopher's Stone. What is it? And, you know, is it real or just the kind of stuff you see in Harry Potter? We'll be back right after this.
Phoenix, Arizona, this is the Kevin Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. If you are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome. We're glad you're here. You've missed a tremendous amount of information, but we're glad you're here now. My guest this evening is Henry Kroll. And Henry is talking with us. We've been talking about a time before there was a moon in the sky above Earth, a time before the moon was here. And I just asked the question. We brought up the subject of monatomic gold, and sometimes referred to as the Philosopher's Stone. And I just brought up that subject and asked, so how is it connected? What does it have to do with the moon? And Henry, had just told us gold is why the Anunnaki came here to begin with. And you were telling us that they were getting it out of the ocean water, and then they found that it was easier to get it from land deposits. And then we had to go to break. So, first of all, tell us, what is monatomic gold?
Well, yeah, I'd love to, but can we do a quick sidebar first on NASA's satellite?
All right.
That one that they sent to impact at the moon, that they were looking for water, impacted near the South Pole, or one of the poles. I think it was the South Pole.
Yes.
I can't remember. But that would indicate that would be where they would want to put their settlement, because it would be out of some of the solar radiation being on the horizon near one of the poles of the moon. This logic to me would indicate, and also there would be water there from being very cold over a long period of time. They did pretend that they found water, or they think they found water after the impact of this satellite and observed the explosion when it hit the moon. So anyway, also Ingo Swann, he's a remote viewer. He thinks that there are factories on the moon. He went there and his remote viewing thing I read about years ago. And but anyway, it would make an ideal spaceship for a large colony of people to travel long distance through space if you knew how to move it or propel it. And it may have been used actually to terraform other planets other than Earth because it is incredibly old. Some of the rocks that they brought back date to 6 billion years old, which is older than our sun, and then one of them was dated 20 billion years old. And I believe they used potassium argon dating methods for this. I don't know how accurate it is, but argon is a inert gas, and it's an element that sort of hangs around forever, so it doesn't deteriorate very much. It doesn't, the radioactivity doesn't bother it. But anyway, this white powder gold is actually, there's many names for this material. The Hebrew is word for it was MFKZT, which is a sacred powder, they call it. And it's actually Anunnaki technology, I believe. They ate it in their food or ate it directly to extend their lifespan thousands of years. What it does in plants use it. Everything on the planet uses this material in the mitochondria to generate power for cell division. Are you with me on this?
Yes.
I can't hear anything on your end, so I don't know if
I'm sitting here listening to you.
But anyway, it's an orbitally rearranged atom. It's two atoms that are combined together, and it can be any element from what I understand. But the higher elements like gold and platinum have more protons and electrons, and they can flip back into their metallic state or into the monatomic state very easily because the particles are so large. They're about 100 times larger than atoms or even larger. The atomic forces are quite weak. And when we go to school here in this country or colleges, they tell us the transportation of elements is impossible. They tell us a lot of things that are impossible, but most of the things they tell us are wrong. So anyway, these particles can flip back and forth, and I'm a gold miner. I've done hundreds of metallic assays, and I've sent out material in California and all over the place doing spectrographic analysis. And one of the tests that I had done on my material, it was rhodium sands, I sent to an outfit in Las Vegas, Nevada, who is no longer in business, called Bremner Technologies. And they had some test units there that were designed by the Germans, invented by the Germans, that would melt ores or gold complex ores using electron beams. This imparts additional electrons to the samples. And what they are like television picture tubes, only bigger. And they beam three of them into a chamber, and they fill the chamber with, they put a little sample in there, whatever ore you're going to melt, and they fill it with argon gas, and they melt this into a glass lump with this electron beams. And doing it that way imparts additional electrons into the atoms of these complex metallic ores. And when it cools off, they got a lump of glass, and then they can break that up and actually get a lot of platinum and gold out of it. Whereas before, you can't get anything out of it.
So what is monatomic gold?
They're just in this monatomic state. They're got all the protons in the center and the electrons orbiting in a ring much further away, and they're paired up, are orbiting in opposite directions in the monatomic state.
So, but what's the importance? What is the importance of monatomic gold?
They're used in cell division in plants and animals. And we use it. When we eat the plants, we get them in our bodies. And we eat supermarket food in this country, and the reason why we have so much health problems now with diabetes and chronic illnesses is because we eat supermarket food grown on the same soil for 200 years, and we don't get enough of this stuff in our diets. And trace minerals. We lack all the minerals. You know, if you can grow things on that desert down there where it's virgin soil by, you know, increasing the acidity of the soil in Phoenix, like David Hudson is doing, then the food you get out of there is going to be much better for you, for your health-wise. But there's several grades of this philosopher's stone. Let me try to clarify that. Now, you can take platinum and gold metals in their pure form and turn them into this white powder using electric frequency. Now, I was told that you can take a gold nugget and hold an ordinary stun gun on there for about a minute, and it'll reduce it into the white powder using the AC high voltage electricity of the stun gun. That's one way of making it. And the other way is the plants use alkaline. Everything that grows, everything that's green on the planet, extrudes alkaline through its roots, and it dissolves minerals in the soil. And if there's a lot of this material in the soil, it takes it up into the xylem and the phloem and brings it up to the leaves and uses photosynthesis to make sugars and starches out of this. But this all requires the monatomics in the mix, the mitochondria that are in the cells, to rearrange the atoms into their proper form so that they have the right elements. Now, Linus Pauling, he was a Nobel Prize winner. He linked every disease on the planet, he says, with some sort of mineral deficiency. And it is true, you know, if we don't have the proper minerals and the monatomics, we're going to get chronic diseases and lose body cells because the mitochondria are starving and they need this material to furnish energy so that we can do our cell division.
Okay, now the Anunnaki were using...
complicated.
The Anunnaki, you said, were using... Henry, can you hear me?
You know...
Henry, can you hear me?
Neanderthal.
Apparently not. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, I've got a question. Take a breath. Here's an important question about this. The Anunnaki, you said, were using this to extend their life for thousands of years. Or for 1,000 years or whatever. If we were to use monatomic gold, if we were to put it in our food and we were to be taking it into our bodies in sufficient quantity, would it extend our lives, say, to 1,000 years?
I don't believe that the human body is constructed in a way to where it would... It might be possible to rearrange the human body to where it could absorb this material more readily. But right now, if you eat the pure white powder, it doesn't do anything for you hardly at all, because it mixes with the hydrochloric acid in your stomach and forms a chloride, and it just passes through you. It doesn't affect you one way or another. But if it's mixed with the right plant nutrients or the right grain, which is what Moses and King Solomon and them guys, King Solomon made most of his money selling bread to the kings and princesses around the world. He was mining gold and turning it into this material and then baking it in a specially prepared priest bread. And they ate it to be smarter and stronger and live longer so that they could outsmart their enemies, these rulers in ancient times. Been used for corruption and greed and maintaining control over the people for thousands of years. That's just, you know, it's maybe it's misused, or maybe they had to fight off barbarians to stop them from coming in and decimating their civilizations. But anyway, the technology has been around for thousands of years. It's just I've tried to revive it, and I put it in the book Philosopher's Stone.
How did Solomon turn gold into the white powder if he didn't have electricity? How was he able to do it?
You can actually turn this into a white powder, according to David Hudson's research, at temperatures of 5,600 degrees. But as far as we know, their ancient forges could not generate those temperatures. Even a blowpipe, you know, you could not get 5,600 temperatures out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But they may have had a way of doing it using frequency, magnetic frequencies, in their field. And I'm not sure.
Yeah, it would seem.
For what we know, I read accounts where Moses could, and these other priests could bring forth this electric fire over the top of the ark called Shekinah glory. It's like an electric discharge from the material that was inside of the ark. They had these two cherubim with their wings facing each other. I read a recent description of it in Exodus where they told Bezalel to make this thing out of shittim wood and then make the handles out of shittim wood and cover them with gold. So the whole thing was a big Mesmer cage, Mesmer frequency cage to extrude outside magnetic frequency from this material to keep it from escaping. But that's getting a little off track, but I think they could go to any planet, these Anunnaki or any extraterrestrially, probably other races need it too. It's probably a very common technology out there in space. You know, why would one race of extraterrestrials have a total lockup on the material, you know? If you eat enough of it, the problem is you become more psychic. Your brain works at a much higher level. People want to understand you. You can do telepathic communication.
All right, now.
And it will take a while for humans to learn the use of this material.
How do we know that about?
I'm aware of it.
How do we know that? How do we know it will make you more psychic?
Well, there's been done a lot of experiments on the material. I put an actual interview in the book that was done in the book of a person that had fasted for 20-some days and then took the material in more of a large quantity than he should have. And I've also talked to other people that have found this material in its native form in Colorado. And they were taking it there, and they were, you know, they were exceptionally clairvoyant.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, it's been around for a while. Even Hitler had some sort of a grasp on it that he got from the Tibetans. You know, this strange symbol that they use, the swastika, they brought it over from Tibet.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they had seven Tibetan monks administering a black substance to Hitler that they called occultum. And what this occultum was, I believe, was the same material that David Hudson found in his gold mine. It's rhodium and gold in a monatomic state, just a black ooze that they were throwing away. They didn't know what it was for quite a while. They were tossing it out, and they discovered it was platinum, finally. But the Tibetans noticed that monkeys and dogs were licking these black rocks that had this ooze on it. The Tibetan monks, years and many centuries ago, you know, they discovered this material, and so they started eating it themselves, and they realized that it extended their lifespan. And it's a mixture of, and also increased their intelligence and their perception, their brain power is just incredibly accelerated.
Okay, tell you what I want to do. I want to open up the telephone lines for our audience, and I mean we've put a lot out on the table here this evening, and I want to give people the opportunity, if they have a question or a comment, to give us a call and ask their question or make their comment. Now, folks, the telephone number, the main telephone number here at the studio, is 623-444-5889. The toll-free number, if you need to call me on the toll-free line, is 888-223-4599. If you happen to live outside of the USA and you live outside of Canada, you can still call me if you want to, at 623-444-5889. Or you can use our flash message feature, which you'll find on my website. You just go to kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down, and you'll see the link that says flash message. But you have to be outside the USA and outside of Canada to use that. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Hello there, Kevin. Hello there, Henry. Very good show tonight, guys. Just by
the way,
I caught. Yeah, I only caught the last 20 minutes of the show. I was tied up with something else, but I do regret that. I regret that for the rest of my life. I'll catch the podcast later. But you know, I've been studying a lot of with Richard Hoagland's hyperdimensional physics model. And I was thinking, how could that have been a possible way that if the moon is in fact a vehicle that I've read postulated in other places, Jim Mars said that in his book Alien Agenda, and I've heard that and from other sources. If it is a vessel, I don't see, could they have used some sort of hyperdimensional travel to get that thing here instead of just having it barreling through space?
It's possible. I put in the book two or three different ways that they could move it around. It takes a tremendous amount of force, about 2 E20 joules per second, to move the moon. That's what it imparts to Earth gravitational-wise. And we actually did a lot of math on that, me and my co-authors and I should say. And it's enough force if you take, like, one per hundredth of that force, or 1/1000th of that percent, and spread it out over the surface of the Earth, it amounts to about 630 watts per square meter. It's more energy than the sun imparts to Earth if you just take a thousandth of that energy. But I think the moon is filled with water. They have a vast reservoir in there, which would be necessary if it is a spaceship, of course, and it's hollow, and it has a surface that's about 26 miles down to where the structure is, just some accumulated debris, incoming material. And there could have been a way of moving it by rotating it opposite directions, and it's called a Kozarev. It was a Russian scientist that did research on that, Kozarev.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, Kevin, thanks. 623-444-5889 in the USA and Canada and anywhere else in the world. 623-444-5889. In the US and Canada, we have a toll-free number if you need to call me on that, and it is 888-223-4599. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, it's Mike from Kentucky.
Hi, Mike.
And I have a couple of comments here. I, as you know, study Zechariah Sitchin, as do you.
Mm-hmm.
And in his 12th Planet book, he talked about how Nibiru and its 12 moons came around and collided with this planet, was out where Mars is now, and it split it in half. One half became the asteroid belt, and the other one was shot off into the third orbit from the sun and eventually became the Earth. He also stated that it had a moon that they called Kingu, and that this moon was also ejected out into space. And what I am wondering is, because I don't think he actually gave a time on that, is the reason the early people didn't notice the moon because it had not yet settled into this orbit. It went into a long elliptical orbit and eventually settled down. Another thing, too, there we're talking about the age of these things, these people living longer. If Nibiru had a 3,600-year orbit, then that means for every 3,600 years that the Earth time passed, these people only aged 1 year. And so this would explain how they lived thousands of years on Earth.
Well, Mike, you know, that's not necessarily the case. Think about it, and I'm just saying it may work another way, and I want to get your thoughts on this. If we take you and put you on Nibiru, and it takes 3,600 of our years for you to make one orbit, isn't it possible you're still going to age at the same rate and you're just going to die before the orbit is complete, long before?
That's correct, because my body is engineered for this planet. Their bodies were engineered for their planet. And so whatever their planetary year would be, that's what it would be here too. But our Earth would spin so much faster than theirs. And another thing, one more thing, and then I'll get off here. As you know, in Genesis, it says that the sons of God, or the sons of Anunnaki, came into the daughters of men. And that's where we got these so-called giants, or Nephilim.
Mm-hmm.
So it was created, something in the genetic factor that permitted their children, their offspring, to mate with our offspring, but yet they could not mate with their creation. And so it seems that historically a lot of Earth women died giving birth to these giant children. And with that, I'll get off of here, Kevin, and let y'all comment and let others call in.
All right. Thanks for the call. What do you think, Henry?
I think there could have been giants on the Earth before the Anunnaki got here, because they found a lot of skulls and evidence that you can look it up.
Unfortunately, we have to step away for a break. The music has started and our mics will go dead. We'll pick up right there when we come back. Don't go away, folks. We'll open the phone lines when we come back. It's the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening is Henry Kroll. And we've been talking about the time before there was a moon in the sky above Earth. And we've been talking about this stuff called monatomic gold. And the relationship between those, the link between those, seems to be these Anunnaki. All right, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. The toll-free number, 888-223-4599. Again, 623-444-5889. You can call that from anywhere in the world. In the USA and Canada, we also have a toll-free number. If you need to call me on the toll-free line, it is 888-223-4599. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada and you have a question that you would like to ask or a comment you would like to make, you can call the main number or you can use the flash message feature on the website by going to kevinsmithshow.com. Scroll down and you'll see the link that says flash message. All right, Frank, why did I call you Frank? Henry.
Captain Hank Kroll.
Maybe that's where I've heard you call yourself that. Maybe that's why I was hearing
was
Hank and said Frank.
You know, I put in millions of pounds of king crab up here in Alaska.
Okay,
I'm an old sea pirate.
Henry, on the moon, it's pretty amazing. Almost all the pictures that we see of the moon from the Apollo missions, almost all of those are black and white, and they're from NASA. And we've always assumed that NASA is where the pictures would be. Well, it turns out that there is just a whole raft of high-resolution color photographs from the moon, but they're not at NASA. They're at USGS, U.S. Geological Survey, because they are the ones who paid for that part of the missions. So they have the color photographs. And there's a guy by the name of Jose Escamilla, who's a filmmaker, and he has produced a film called Luna. And in this film, you're looking at the color photographs of the moon. real, genuine Apollo photographs in color of the moon. Now, some of these show what look like hills or mountains of gold. They're very clearly gold in color. I don't know if that means that they are gold, but they are gold in color. Do you know anything about that, about gold on the moon?
I haven't heard that one. I didn't know anything about that at all. If there was a lot of gold on the moon, then they wouldn't have any reason to come to the Earth, you see.
Unless the moon is a transshipment point. Unless the moon is a transshipment point for gold that they're getting off the Earth.
In my mining experience, there are places in the United States and in the world where there is no evidence of how the gold got there, where they find it. And they come across an area that's almost pure gold, and there's no explanation for it at all, except the possibility that it came from space. Just a meteorite made of mostly pure gold that impacted Earth. And anyway, a lot of things on Earth were imported. Like, where does uranium come from, for example? It's a really heavy element. It would be formed down, you know, in old stars or something that exploded. Not on Earth. It wouldn't be formed on Earth. It had to be imported. There's a lot of things like that I mention in my book on it, but the great mysteries, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's.
Science, I think, lived on Earth a long time, way before the moon came in.
Let's go back to the telephone lines. And, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, this is Ryan in Puget Sound.
Hi, Ryan.
Evening. I have two quick questions, and I think I'll probably just hang up when I'm done and listen to the...
All right.
When the Anunnaki were here, supposing they were here, did they have a home base on this planet? I'm really not as up to speed on the Anunnaki story as other people are, but was there one like location on this planet where they would, if they were to come back or when they were here, that would be been their main base? And the other question is what do you think about these tall towers on the moon? I have no doubt that there's tall glass towers on the moon because all the photographs were NASA airbrushed them out. Why would NASA airbrush out all those photographs? There's got to be something they're trying to hide there. What do you think those glass towers are? And I'll just take it off the air. Great show tonight.
All right. Thanks. All right, let's start with home base for the Anunnaki. Is there a place here on the planet that was kind of their home base that they would, if they come back, very likely would return to that base?
Well, our history tells us that would be in Iraq somewhere. Maybe this is the reason why we are making that presence in Iraq right now. And they may have probably had several bases on the planet. Where do the pyramids come from in Mexico? And where are the pyramids? Who invented pyramids anyway? They seem to be all over the globe. They're in the Andes Mountains or in China. There's a Nanking, there's a big pyramids over there, three of them that I could see on Google Earth. That as far as living on a planet, this is a preconceived human idea that you have to have a planet to live on. Well, if you have technology that you can manifest or make things or go anywhere you want to, you wouldn't need a planet to live on. This is, you know, humans are territorial. They have this territorial way of thinking, and extraterrestrials don't need to think that way like a human, you see. They don't need a specific planet. They don't need to claim real estate or fence it in or whatever, put barking dogs on it or whatever. It's just that we have this preconceived, ingrained, inbred type of way of thinking, you know. A really advanced civilization can go anywhere. They could live in our upper atmosphere, and there may be actually hundreds of thousands of them up there right now in these big ships that show up on NASA's photograph during the Tether experiment, which I wrote a book about called Home of the Angels. And it's you do a search on henrykroll.com, you'll come into my websites. And actually, it's a couple of them. I've got Guard Dog Books and also ElastaPublishing.com.
All right. Now, what about... So, but if they were doing mining on this planet, they would have to have a base of operations.
Well, I think they may have started in Africa with that, or they may have had some Neanderthals, and they couldn't teach them how to use a shovel properly, so that then they created mankind, you know, because he can take directions better, had a different brain orientation. Most of their language is through mental commands. You see, they don't have to use verbal speech. And this, the Anunnaki pictures that we have are more, they're more lizard or bird-like, reptilian, so they probably couldn't enunciate vowels. This, the Hebrew language has no vowels. So it may be their language that was adapted or adopted by humans.
Mm-hmm.
And the hard palate can't make a vowel sound, and they wouldn't want to communicate with us verbally anyway. They'd rather use their method.
Well, you know, the Slavic languages don't use vowels either. Like Russian, well, Serbian.
Terrestrial also in nature, you know, mm-hmm. the root of the language itself. We just don't know. Our history has been so suppressed and so muddled by the people, the rulers that write the history, you know, in this country, that...
All right, let's go back to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello,
it's
caller.
Ray from California.
I'm sorry, your first name?
It's Ray from California.
Okay, Ray, you're on the air. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, Kevin, great show. I'm glad you're back.
Thanks.
And my question is, I've been seeing a lot of these pictures, photos from India, and these photos were of giant skeletons, and they started showing up after the tsunamis hit India. So mm-hmm. I'm wondering if Henry knows anything about that, because of course there are pyramids in India. So I'm just wondering, you know, can he put that together, or is it valid, or what?
Okay, let's find out. Do you know anything about the giant skeletons being found in India, Henry?
Yes, I actually have a couple that I pasted in my book, but. If they lived before the moon came in, then I would assume that they were native to the Earth and not necessarily reptilian creatures. They were probably more like us, and they were from the Earth, because I have a really good friend that told me a story about 30 years ago where he and his son went canoeing in Prince William Sound, Alaska, and they... went by this Indian village in the middle of Prince William Sound. Believe it or not, you can look it up on Google Earth. It's called Tatitlic, Tatitlic. And there are some islands off from where this Indian village is. And this guy was he owned a sporting goods store, but he and his son were canoeing out there. And the Indians told him, don't go near those islands. They're burial grounds. And they went over there anyway, and he found a cave, and he squeezed inside of this cave, and got in there. He didn't have a light, and he brushed up against something that felt like a body. And after his heart rate calmed down a little bit, he got out his cigarette lighter and some matches and looked at them, and they were six mummies in there seated next to each other on a stone shelf, and they had a tape measure in his pocket, and he pulled that out, and he measured their thigh bones and their height of their knees and their height, and he estimated that they were 7 and 7.5 feet tall, and they had red hair. And they were buried or mummified in the sitting position. So,
and now, what
I don't know.
What year was this?
That was back in early 60s. And they found caves with 100,000 mummies like that in Colorado and also Utah. There's lots of them there. And also in Death Valley, there's a big place there that used to be an Egyptian seaport. Death Valley is 200 feet below sea level, 220, 250 feet in some places.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. All right, we are back. My guest this evening is Henry Kroll, not Frank, Henry, and but sometimes goes by Captain Hank Kroll, and that's because he's a ship's captain as well. But the telephone lines are open. We're on final approach. That means if you're going to call, you need to do so like right now. 623-444-5889 is the main number. And the toll-free number, 888-223-4599. We have a flash message from the United Kingdom, and this is from John. It says, did Mars ever have a moon, and could this support the theory that Mars once had oceans? Well, it has two tiny moons right now, but what do you know about in the ancient past, Henry? Do you know if it had a bigger moon?
I don't think it did. It had volcanism on the moon, so it must have had an atmosphere there, and there is no active volcanoes on the moon at the present time. And if it did, it would probably still have an atmosphere because volcanoes are what produce atmospheres on planets.
It used to have active volcanoes. The largest volcano in the solar system is on Mars.
I know. Olympus Mons. It's huge.
So it used to.
Anyway, it did have oceans, I believe. And it may even have limestone on there, which is calcium carbonate made by sea creatures called coccolithophores. And NASA had one satellite there where they put a probe up against the rock, and it looks like they intentionally destroyed a crinoid.
Yeah.
It's a fossil that makes limestone. They didn't want anybody to see it. It was a little jointed fossil.
Yeah, it's too late. We already saw it.
Smashed it.
Let's go to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Gary from Nebraska.
Hi, Gary.
That was a really interesting show tonight, and I'm glad you have had me on the program.
Well, thank you.
You know, I've read some of the Velikovsky books, and I was somewhat startled to learn that Hank has... one that was unpublished. Would he know of any chance that that book might be published one day?
The answer to that is yes. But Henry, go ahead.
Copying it off and putting it up for sale on my website for $23 or something like that. I ran off one copy today at the UPS store. It's 110 pages. The title of it is In the Beginning. And I don't think it's a copywritten material, but I might be able to run off copies legally and sell them if it isn't copywritten.
Well, I would look forward to the opportunity just as I'm looking to buy that, just as I'm looking forward to the opportunity to buy your book, Cosmological Ice Ages. It sounds very interesting. So thanks a lot.
Okay, Gary, thanks for the call. We have time. If you want to call in, and you call right now, we got time for one more real quick call. Henry, it's I was surprised when you told me that you had run across a Velikovsky book that had never been published. And I expressed to you that I was surprised, and I think other people, just like Gary, are surprised to hear that. And, you know, I think there's a built-in market for that book if it's legal for you to do that, if it's legal for you to publish that.
Well, I hope it is. It's 110 pages, and I have it on my computer. I got it off the internet, and it took me 3 years to find it. And you read part of the chapter on their Earth without a moon.
Uh-huh.
I believe I emailed you the whole book, actually 110 pages.
I just printed out the part we were talking about here tonight. Let's take this last call. Let's take this last call, Henry, and we'll come back to you here in just a second. But we're running out of time. I want to get this call in. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Henry. It's Francois from Montreal.
Hello, Francois. How are you?
I'm fine.
Good.
I have a quick comment.
All right.
There's an author named, a French author named Jean Sandy, who write a book about the moon and the Bible in the 60s. And in that book, he said that the moon turns once a month on itself, so it always presents the same sight to us. It also turns 13 times in a year around the Earth, so there are 13 lunar months in a year each year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the right distance, so it's the same size as the sun, so there's a lunar eclipse. And he said that the moon does not obey Newton laws, and that there's a propulsion system running for it to behave that way.
Yeah, because it has too much precision about it. I'm familiar with that. Thank you so much for the call. Very interesting. All right, Henry, I want people to know where to go get your books. And before we run out of time, so tell us, where can we get your books?
You can get them off Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Just do a search on Henry Kroll, or if you type my name into Google, or henrykroll.com, it'll take you directly into alaskapublishing.com. Also have guarddogbooks.com. But anyway, the Cosmological Ice Ages can also be ordered direct from the publisher, which is Trafford. They have offices in the United States and all over the world, in the United Kingdom, and also in Victoria, British Columbia. Trafford, TRAFFORD.com. And
let's tell people.
Sea Pirate, and I hired and fired more deckhands than anybody in Alaska.
Well, let's make sure people know how to spell your name, too. It is K-R-O-L-L. Henry Kroll. K-R-O-L-L. Henry, if you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment as I bring the show to a close, because I'd like to chat with you for just a moment after the show. Folks, if you miss a single second of any show, you're absolutely just going to miss universes of information. I tell you this, and here you have the living proof. You know, a lot of shows go for the same guests over and over and over and over. I'm looking for information, not names. Now, Henry Kroll has a name, of course. He's well known. But I'm looking for the information these folks have. And this is just phenomenal information. It adds to the body of information that we all are trying to sort of build up and assimilate. About where did it all come from? How did it all happen? What's the reason for it all? And maybe, what does that mean for our future? There was a time when there was no moon. At least it was not in Earth orbit. This much, even the establishment scientists agree. There was a time before there was a moon. There are accounts, there are ancient records that talk about people that lived on the Earth in that time before the moon. My question, as always, is so why the silence? What's the big secret? What is it they're trying to keep us from knowing? And I think, again, that it's the remnants of high technology that came here from elsewhere. I think, but I can't prove that. I can prove one thing. I can prove this. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.